There's not much chance of reducing the current expense of healthcare, but what can be done to help slow the rate of increase? I'm Lori Townsend. Studies show about 3/4 of healthcare dollars go to treat chronic disease. The CDC estimates about 1/3 of those chronic diseases are directly attributed to an unhealthy lifestyle. If your insurance company offers incentives for fitness, would you embrace or denounce it as too much peering into your personal life? Healthcare Cost Solutions is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in once again for Steve Heimel. He'll be back next week. And today we're kind of continuing our discussion about the expense of healthcare in Alaska. It's growing at an unsustainable rate. Last week we talked about defining the problems and why the rates are so high here in Alaska. And this week we're going to move on to solutions and what's being recommended. In the studio with me is once again Deb Erickson, who is the executive director of the Alaska Healthcare Commission, the state's commission that's looking into the cost of healthcare in Alaska and also what some of the solutions are. And Tammy Green, the regional director of health management services for Providence Health Services. Good morning, ladies.
And good morning, Lori.
Also joining us by phone in just a little while will be Jeffrey Davis. He's the president of Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska and a member. Jeff is also a member of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. He'll be talking about what insurance companies are doing to help kind of incentivize better health. You can join our conversation if you have solution suggestions, if your workplace has implemented incentives for better health. We'd love to hear those stories. Or if you've turned health problems of your own around by taking charge of your health and changing maybe some bad habits. You can give us a call at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Or if you're in the Anchorage area, you can call us at 550-8422. 550-8422. Deb, let's talk a little bit. Last week, as I said, we defined the problems. This week, we're looking at solutions, and I know the commission has been busy working on some of those solutions. Give us an overview of what some of those are.
Okay, first, I want to point out that the commission has started with identifying a vision for our future healthcare system as being one that focuses on helping Alaskans to be healthy rather than the incentives, the financial incentives and the economics of the healthcare system driving the delivery of medical services. So focusing on having a healthy population first and then the sustainability of the healthcare system is an important part of that vision. But making sure that the consumer and patients are fully engaged in both their healthcare experience and in living healthy lifestyles is one of the key strategies that's driving all of the conversations that the commission's having about potential solutions. And so just with that as a background, some of the areas we talked about, the one thing that came up last week related to solutions is the commission has recommendations related to improved price and quality transparency. So that Alaskans have are armed with information that they need to make better decisions, but also it's important for clinicians and healthcare provider organizations to have that information as well for supporting improvement in how services are delivered, just as one example. We've also looked at another statistic that's kind of driven part of our work has been that we've learned from research that 30% or more of all healthcare spending is actually wasted spending. It's for services that aren't medically necessary or that aren't supported by the evidence in some way or that are just inefficient. And so we have a series of recommendations related to supporting clinical decisions made by the provider and the patient in partnership to be more effective and more evidence-based. We also have learned that other countries that focus their healthcare resources on primary care, getting the care that patients get up front, do better both in terms of spending and also health outcomes. They have better health outcomes and they spend less money. And so we have a series of recommendations related to enhancing the quality and the efficiency of care on upfront in the primary care arena. Also around financing for healthcare services, the way services are paid for really drives a real fragmented approach to providing individual services. So we need to design new payment structures that do a better job of incentivizing the quality of care and outcomes rather than just delivery of services. We have some foundational pieces around making sure we have a sustainable healthcare workforce, that we have the health information infrastructure in place to support the data that we need and the decisions and analysis of that data. But a big focus of our work is around prevention. And we talk about personal responsibility, but we get concerned that it might sound too much like we're trying to blame individuals for their health problems, and that's not the point. We talk more in terms of how do we support engaging individuals, and what, since our recommendations are really targeted at the legislature and the governor of the state, what are some high-level state policy recommendations we can make to support Alaskans to live healthier lifestyles? And so an important part of that is what employers do, since most adults spend probably, what, half of their waking hours in the workplace. It's a real important piece, and especially the employer's role in providing health benefits to the extent larger employers are able to afford to do that. So
we'll get to some of those, because that's a really interesting component, the idea of what employers are doing to help, and we'll bring Tammy in on that conversation and also Jeff. But I want to take some of the pieces that you just talked about, and also to let our listeners know we're talking about solutions for healthcare expense and also just your general health. It's good to be aware of ways that we can kind of take charge of our own health, because that's what really needs to happen, is for people to be in charge of how they care for themselves so that you don't end up having to go to the doctor so often. 1-800-478-8255. If you have solution suggestions or if your workplace is implementing incentives for better health, give us a call and share your story with us. And Deb, one of the solutions that you talked about is increasing price transparency. Why is it hard to kind of figure out what prices are? Are you talking about menus of prices when you go into the doctor? They can hand you a sheet of paper that says if you want this procedure, it's going to cost this much. But how difficult would that be, because there's so many variables in people's conditions?
It's very complicated. And I think one of the good things that Alaska can benefit from is there are other states out there that have been more kind of on the bleeding edge of experimenting with systems that, information systems that provide that information for the consumer. So one model we might use is a web-based system. There also are insurance companies across the country have started working on with their plan beneficiaries more and more and providing this information through the internet for them. One of the reasons it's so complicated, and we talked about this a little bit last week in our pricing, about when we talked about our pricing study of this past year, is that the price that's presented is in healthcare usually is not the amount of money that's paid in the end, that's actually reimbursed. And there are lots of different factors driving that. Most public payer plans, so Medicare, which is the federal government driven program providing care for older Americans and disabled folks, Medicaid, which provides care for folks who are below a certain level related to poverty, they have fee schedules off which providers are reimbursed. And then individual insurance companies will negotiate with healthcare providers for a discount off their whatever their billed charges are. So many, and that's just a few examples.
Well, and there's also the issue of if someone came in and said, I need my appendix removed. That sounds simple enough, and you could say, well, that's going to cost you $200, except for I'm sure that factors including age and physical condition and health history, there's all these other things that come into play to make it more difficult to sort of just have a one price fits all.
Well, I think it makes makes providers nervous to just offer a single price because of all of the different variables that play into the actual procedures. But then the other complexity is that a lot of the players who are going to be involved in delivering that care for that patient are all paid separately, and they don't even necessarily have agreements between each other. And so, you know, folks who have been through this sort of experience understand they're going to get a bill from the hospital, they're going to get a separate mm-hmm. bill from the anesthesiologist, they're going to get a separate bill from the laboratory. And that goes on and on and on. And then for each of those, every service has an individual price. So earlier when I mentioned one of the solutions that the commission's focused on is paying for value rather than paying for individual services, is there are models of trying to bundle those services into a package. So that's just another solution area that we're studying. But when it comes to price transparency, it's one of the things that makes that effort more complex.
Before we get to Tammy here to talk a little bit about what they're working on at Providence, do you think that there's a large impact from the fear of litigation that doctors are ordering? You talked about wasted dollars. 30% are wasted dollars. Are you finding in your studies that there's a lot of tests being ordered because doctors are concerned about litigation if something gets missed and then somebody decides to sue because they think the doctor didn't do a good enough job? Were you able to kind of tease out how that may be impacting these wasted dollars?
That's a conversation that we've had, and we have anecdotal information about that, but it's actually on the list for solutions the commission will be studying this coming year, is the impact of malpractice reform in this state. And Alaska is actually ahead of most other states in terms of malpractice tort reform. Based on a couple of laws that have been passed in our state laws over the past 15 or 20 years, one in the 90s, and then the one most recently in 2005. And so we'll be studying over the next few months the impact of medical malpractice reform, probably with a little bit more of a focus on how that's impacted the medical malpractice insurance rates for providers. That's another component of the cost that gets passed on to patients and payers. So it is an issue, and it's something we'll be studying in more detail the coming year.
And you also mentioned primary care. And I think it's the same thing that used to be referred to as general practice, family medicine, doctors who engaged in sort of a broad overview of your health. And are there ideas in place to kind of help get more young people into general practice, into family medicine? I know that for a long time the argument was, well, if I go to medical school, the expense is so high, it's going to take me forever to pay off my school debt, so I better specialize. Are there things being done to help people get through school without this tremendous debt, but go into that very critical family practice?
There are a whole series of things going on both at the federal and the state level to support increasing the supply of primary care physicians. Just as one example, the federal government announced just late last week that they were funding, they just had put a bunch of additional funds into the National Health Service Corps in a pilot program to target last year medical students in their last year, and offering up to $120,000 to repay their loans if they will agree to go into primary care and to serve in an underserved area. So that's just one example of there's a lot of programs, and they're not all just focused on increasing the supply of primary care physicians, but looking at the use of advanced nurse practitioners, physician's assistants. What the commission's been most interested in recently is the patient-centered medical home model and the use of a team that is focused around the needs of the patient, not the needs of the medical practice, and with a physician and the leadership of that team, but, you know, social workers, behavioral health specialists, medical assistants who can come together to figure out how to meet the needs of that patient in a more efficient, effective way than just the traditional office visit with a physician.
Sure. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to join our discussion if you have solution suggestions, or if perhaps your workplace has implemented incentives for better health, or you've turned your own health problems around by yourself by taking charge. Give us a call and share your story. 550-8422 is the number in the Anchorage area. And now let's talk to Tammy a bit here. Tammy Green is the Regional Director of Health Management Services for Providence Health Services. And Tammy, walk us through the incentives. We know that 3/4 of healthcare dollars go to chronic disease. Walk us through the incentives at Providence for improving employee health beyond the no smoker hire mandate. What else are you implementing?
Well, thank you, and it's really fabulous to be here. I'd spoken to Deb earlier about, you know, I've kind of waited my entire career. I've been in health promotion and prevention for over 20 years, and we're now at that place where it's no longer something that's just a nice to have or you might want to do it for your employees, but it's really truly part of a business strategy, and organizations and employers are really recognizing that. We've been on this journey at Providence the last 4 years and really have a what I call the population health and well-being model. And it's not just, you know, a matter of little isolated programs, but it's really looking at a strategic overview of what you're trying to do. You know, we're a healthcare system, but we're also an employer, the largest private employer in Alaska. And so we want our employees to be healthy and engaged and productive. You know, we're a 24/7, 365 operation, high stress, deliver great healthcare. And I think one of our goals was we are leaders in healthcare. We should be leaders in health and well-being, and that should really start from within. It's kind of the old adage of, you know, don your own mask first before you assist others. And I think that's been something I've been really committed to, that we set the example. So ours is really a large strategy, not just, you know, incentives, but at the base of what you're trying to do oftentimes is really driven by your plan design and the incentives that you're offering for your folks to be engaged in healthy behaviors. You know, as human nature has it, we default to the easiest choice, and sometimes that's not always the healthiest choice. So as an employer, it really is incumbent upon us to really develop what I call choice architecture. And there's a really outstanding book called Nudge that was one of the first books around behavioral economics written a few years ago. And it really discusses what you need to do in terms of helping people make the right choices. You know, I've been in this business for a while, and I think behavioral economics is really a field that's helping us understand how people really act. You know, we'd like to think we're rational and we make the right choices with just having knowledge, but as we know, knowledge doesn't change behavior. So we have to give our employees a little nudge. And we also like to think that we're partners, that we come to the middle with, you know, a great benefit plan package, but then we'd like our employees to be partners with us and take some responsibility for moving their health. In 2009, we started our journey, and our initiative and our brand is really I Choose Health. You've probably all seen the commercials, I Choose Providence. Really wanted to play off of that so that it was more personal to our employees, that we really wanted to send that message. So we've done many things over the last 3 years, and the great thing is that we've seen now our data. We just got our third year of data, and we've seen a change in our health risk status. We've seen our biometrics change. And we know part of it is that, yes, we incentivized our folks to meet certain criteria around biometrics and participation. And initially, I think people felt like, that's a little, you know, why are you doing this? And the whole goal is that we're not trying to punish people or force them to do anything, but we're saying, here's an opportunity to learn about yourself, your numbers. And then, by the way, we have great resources and services to really help you meet those goals. Because in the end, you know, we can nudge people extrinsically with those kind of motivations, and I think we oftentimes have to use those to get people started. But in the end, we hope that it really turns intrinsic and that folks say, wow, I feel better, I have more energy to play with my kids. And that's the kind of thing that we're seeing. We're not only seeing hard data. In 2009, we had 36% of our population, and we have about 4,400 employees that were obese, meaning they had a body mass index over 30. Came down to 34 last year, and this year we just hit 32. So we still have a lot of opportunity, but it's very exciting to see that people are moving in the right direction. And so we know that if we really hadn't engaged in this purposeful, intentional journey in 2009, we certainly wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing now within our population.
That term behavioral economics is really interesting. And I wonder what kind of a difference do these or can these types of incentives make? Is Providence holding the line on healthcare premium increases based on some of these savings? I realize that you haven't changed the numbers a lot, but
right,
they are changing. And how can that translate into savings?
And actually, when you look at the change in our obesity from 36 to 32, that's pretty dramatic in terms of public health. I come from a public health background as well. But we are seeing the cost trend mirror those health status improvements as well. We don't have our final data in for 2011, but we certainly know that, you know, when we started on this journey, we were kind of headed in a trajectory that really mirrors what a lot of employers are, double-digit inflation and that sort of thing. But we've seen that starting to change. And the thing I always like to remind people is that, you know, this has been 30 or more years of culture, not only at Providence, but in our society, and now we're going to unwind all of this. It's going to take a little bit of time, but I think the most important part to remember is not to get discouraged, but to take success in what we see and build on that and know that, again, it's not going to happen overnight, but we're moving in the direction, and you start to see it anecdotally, too, with our employees and the positive things that they say.
1-800-478-8255 is the number to call if you have some solution suggestions, or perhaps your workplace has incentivized your work program for better health, or you've turned your own problems around. 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. Out of the Anchorage area, within the Anchorage area, you can call 550-8422. We're going to bring Jeff on now. Jeff Davis is the president of Premera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. He's also a member of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
I am well, and you are joining us once again. He was with us last week in the studio. Now today he's on the phone because he's out of town. Jeff, I'd really like for you to start with, if you don't mind, your own story. You have a very interesting story about your own health improvement. And I think that kind of segues nicely for us, our discussion, to move into kind of some personal responsibility ideas. So tell us about your own journey.
Sure, Lori, I'd be happy to. And sorry I can't be with you in the studio today. Had to come a long ways to not have to be on the webcam, right?
That's right.
So my own journey is not unlike, I'm sure, a lot of people, and I was fortunate enough to work in an industry where I had access to some of the things that have been described here and could kind of connect the dots. But in a nutshell, what I found is, as I was getting older and my weight was going up, that my biometric numbers were getting worse. I have a genetic predisposition to high cholesterol and high blood pressure, but it was getting to the point that my personal physician was really worried about my cholesterol, about my high blood pressure, and about what was happening with my blood glucose. And in fact, I had developed something that's referred to as metabolic syndrome. And what the practitioners will tell you is, if you have metabolic syndrome, you are on your way to a heart attack or a stroke or diabetes or all of the above. And that certainly was not a place that I wanted to go. Kind of through a series of happenstance, my wife signed me up to go and have a nutritional assessment, and I had already made a decision I wanted to work with a personal trainer, actually based on observing someone much older than me at the pool in Mexico, who looked really good, and me saying to my wife, wow, when I'm his age, I want to look like that. And then that sort of stuck with me. And over a year or so, I thought, wow, if I want to look like that when I'm 70-something, don't I want to look like that now? So small steps then led to a nutritional assessment and working with a personal trainer, watching for the first time in my life what I ate, portions, what it looked like, and spreading it out through the day, working with a trainer on an effective program that changed up every day and every week. I didn't know before that you couldn't just do the same thing that you've been doing since junior high and get results. And the bottom line was within about 5 months, I had lost 40 pounds. My body fat percentage had gone from 27 to 17. And over the period since then, I've been working on gaining muscle, and I feel really good. And my blood pressure is under control with a very minuscule amount of medication versus the big stuff that I was taking earlier, and my cholesterol, I'm taking 1/10 of the medication I was taking before. So in my own case, watching what I put in my mouth and watching how much I moved very quickly, again within less than 6 months, resulted in a significant change in my health status and also a significant change in how much money my health insurer was spending every month to try to prevent something bad from happening rather than me dealing with the root cause.
And Jeff, I know that Primera has some programs that you're either going to implement or you have. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with Primera to help promote and incentivize healthier living for your insured.
Sure, Lori, I'm happy to. And that was one of the interesting things about this, I think, when you think of Tammy talking about behavioral economics. I knew that what I ate and how much I moved was affecting my health, but because I was standing in front of groups and saying personal lifestyle choices are important, the statistics that Deb put out in the beginning and that you mentioned, Lori, it's 3/4 of our dollars are spent on chronic disease and 1/3 of that is due to lifestyle. I knew all that, but I needed something more to make it happen. So a number of years ago, about 6 years ago, we started down a journey with our small group employers. And it's what we were trying to figure out was how could we do the things on us in a small group employer with average of 10 employees, where we have thousands of those groups, and so it would be really resource intense to do a specific plan with each of them. How could we create programs or incentives that would help the employees working for those employers and help those employers accomplish what Tammy has so eloquently described to us? So we started down a journey. We thought, oh, well, if we just offer a health risk appraisal, certainly everyone will recognize that that's a value when we'll take it. And we found out we were really wrong about that. And then the first year, 4% of the people we offered it to actually took it. We then introduced some rather small financial incentives for the employers. I think it was about $50 a year, and we got it clear up to 16%. So we realized, oh, money does talk, but we need more than that. And so what we introduced the next year was a fairly significant employer incentive that said, if you can get X percentage of your employees or more to take a health risk appraisal, we'll give you a significant discount on your premium. It was up to 5%. And given the cost of health insurance, because healthcare costs so much, that was a significant incentive. So we had a lot of groups who got their participation up to 100% or close to it. And in fact, we moved to a point where the majority of groups had someone participating, and on average, we had about 56% participation. So that's really good, but not as far as we want to go. So this July, in fact, we're rolling out kind of the next generation of this program, where not only will it be based on a health risk appraisal, but we've figured out how to make biometric screening also available to all of our small group members. And we will continue to provide the employer incentive, but we will also now begin to provide an employee incentive, specifically just to give kind of a scale to it, a debit card worth $150 for everyone who completes their biometric screen and their health risk appraisal, who's part of our small group plan. And it will be interesting to see where that goes, but what we believe and what was certainly true in my own experience was understanding my biometrics, my blood pressure, my cholesterol, my glucose, was an important part of the motivation for me to actually take some action and change things. So we're doing that in small group. With large group, we have a subsidiary called Vivacity, who works one-on-one with those clients to create something that's specific to that client, similar to with the same goals that Providence had, but not nearly as elaborate as that so far. And then I think the other thing I would just mention is, just as Providence is a healthcare provider but also an employer, we are a health insurance healthcare provider and also an employer with about 3,000 employees. And we've been on this journey as an employer as well. We've introduced the next generation of incentives for our people, which I won't go into. But what I can tell you is that it has significantly impacted the growth of healthcare spending for our company. We're down in about the 3% per year growth in healthcare spending now, where we used to be right in line with the rest of the industry, more in the 8 to 12%.
Well, Jeff, thank you for that overview of what Primera is implementing. And we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about obesity and the issues surrounding what can be done about obesity and what insurance companies may be doing to look into some of those issues. As we continue our discussion on health care solutions on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
Thanks for being with us today on Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and we're talking about solutions for the high cost of healthcare. And of course, some of those solutions are personal responsibility. A lot of those solutions are. We know that there is epidemic rates of obesity in our country. And Alan in Anchorage wants to talk to us about the need, I believe, for more patient education on obesity. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Terry. One of the things that I've noticed, my whole family is very, very heavy, including my spouse, myself as well. But my body mass index hovers close to about 28, which is not great, but it's better. But physicians over the years have not been willing to sit my family down and talk to them and say, you are obese. You know, you are morbidly obese, as a matter of fact, and here are all the health things that are going to happen. It's not that you're at a greater risk. Eventually, you will most likely develop type 2 diabetes. You are going to develop high blood pressure. Here are all the things that are going to happen if we don't address the core issue, which is your overall health, which comes with exercise and proper dietary intake and all of the things that have already been discussed and go along with personal responsibility. It's just surprised me that I've actually had physicians tell my family members, just don't exercise. If it bothers you, don't exercise. And yeah, you'll be okay. Here, take this pill. And that seems to come up on a pretty regular basis. And we have experience in both the military healthcare system and civilian healthcare system. So I get a little concerned that seems to be a trend.
Alan, do you think that it would make a big difference if a doctor said, hey, you need to get up and exercise? It sounds like you're quite aware yourself of what the health risks are. So does it matter if a doctor tells you, look, you need to get up and move, or do we need to be our own doctors in that respect?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that if a physician isn't willing to have that discussion every time, you know, you come in for an annual exam or something, a lot of people assume that if you're not telling me it's a problem, then it must not be that big of a deal. And that risk is just that. It's just a risk. And it probably won't happen to me.
That's a good point.
A lot of people seem to many of us put a lot of weight into what our physicians say. They're very educated people. That's their job. That's what they do. And if they don't discuss it with us, then many people just kind of blow it off as, well, I'm just a little overweight. And, you know, it had an interesting comment from a friend the other day when I said, I've always been heavy. And she says, you're not heavy. I'm like, I am 40 pounds overweight. The fact that you do not define that as heavy because I carry it well, that's not okay. You know, if you are using morbid obesity as heavy for your diagnosis of what's heavy in this country, then we've shifted way too far away from what is actually a healthy size for a person.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for the call. You raised some excellent points, and I'm going to let Tammy take a stab at this. I think that it's true. I was kind of playing devil's advocate there a little bit about shouldn't you just figure this out on your own? But we know that denial is very powerful, and people have known for several decades, not several decades, but at least a couple of decades, that smoking is very, very bad for you. Yet people continue to smoke cigarettes, just chugging along and thinking that somehow they'll be the one that escapes the risk of all the different cancers that are associated with smoking. Tammy, what are doctors at Providence doing about addressing these issues that maybe are uncomfortable to talk about with their patients but need to be done?
I think he raises an incredible point, and it really goes to, I think, further solidify our need to move to patient-centered medical home models, where a lot of times I talk to physicians who they don't feel comfortable maybe talking about obesity or really what to do about it. I've had a lot of them say that, but in our clinic, for our own employees, we're working on a patient-centered medical home type model. So our physicians and our nurse practitioners, they talk to our patients or our employees, but then from there they get shifted to a health coach or a chronic care management coach. That's where the real beauty and power is in this medical-centered or patient-centered medical home model, because you really get folks who have expertise in different areas. And everybody does look to the doc or the physician as the mainstay of the team, and as Alan said, if they don't say anything's wrong, then you walk away and think everything's fine. But when we start to, I think, really engage people in this different model where they're, I call them the CEO of their own healthcare, their own health and well-being, and get people engaged, then they have a different relationship with their physician so that they can be much more a partner rather than just a passive consumer of healthcare.
Well, and I love that idea of the doctor says, look, here's the bad news. You need to do something about this. But yet then the patient isn't just going home to be depressed about it and maybe sit on the couch and eat some more snacks.
Right.
Instead, they're offered help with this team that can say, but the good news is we can help you figure out a plan that works for you. So that sounds like a really holistic sort of approach.
Right.
Jeff is still on the line also. And Jeff, I wanted to ask you if you think there will be a time when insurance companies consider obesity as a pre-existing condition, and perhaps people won't be able to get insurance based on that. I know that there are pre-existing conditions that insurance companies won't pick somebody up for. Do you think that that day may be coming when this issue becomes, there's a lot of research related to the cost of obesity-related illnesses? Do you think that's coming?
Very interesting question, Lori. Thank you. And I just want to comment that I really liked Alan's questions. And I think what it points to is that this is a system. It wasn't probably put together by intelligent design, but we do have a system. And all these parts are interconnected. And so when we think about changing personal lifestyle, yes, the physicians have a role. Yes, we have a role. The state has a role. And I just think it's important to remember that, and also remember that different people are motivated by different things. And it may be the physician is the motivation for one person, or it may be, like it was for me, you know, realizing my biometrics were bad and having a different vision of where I wanted to go. But I just think it's important for us to remember that we have to, there's not one answer here. There are multiple answers. With respect to your question, Lori, today medical underwriting is what's called, is practiced in Alaska. It's allowed by an insurer. So if someone comes to us and applies for an individual policy, and this has been the case for a long time, one of the things we look at is height and weight, which is essentially getting to BMI. And if a person falls outside of a certain range, then in fact they are the insurer does not have to pick them up and write a policy for them. So today what you're describing is happening. Now, fortunately in Alaska, that person, if they need health insurance, has an option, which is the state high-risk pool, which I should mention. But that is happening, and it is a recognition that obesity is one of the factors that can lead to higher health care costs in the future. I think there's one other point, though, that your question leads me to, and that is, you know, where is this going in the future? So come 2014, if the Affordable Care Act gets implemented as it is, there will be no pre-existing conditions any longer. So that, what I just described, would go away. But the need to help encourage, and I love the title of the book that Tammy talked about, I'm going to find that, nudge, to find ways to nudge people and reward people for kinds of things that we know do impact their health, is going to continue to be a journey. And the good news is that technology is now becoming our friend around this. Let me describe something that we're thinking of or looking to implement, which would be a program that would be available online for any Alaskan who wanted it, because we're concerned not just about the health of our members, but of Alaska as a whole. And that program would allow you to go online and create your shopping list. Here's the things I intend to buy. And then would ask you, do you want to see some healthier options? And would show you, in fact, healthier options, independently rated and determined, for the things that you were already intending to buy, and would also point you to those where there was a discount available. Because we know what you eat impacts what your health is. There's another program that we're looking at that would enable people to very easily, again with the technology we have now, just to wear a small device to be able to track and report their activity, their number of steps, etc. Well, with those two things in place and with the ability to customize plan designs down to an individual basis, which is coming, you could imagine the day that if I move more and eat better, that perhaps my deductible gets reduced, or perhaps my cost share gets reduced, or perhaps my premium gets reduced. So we're not there yet, but I think what is going to be possible is going to really help to nudge people along in the pretty near future.
Well, thank you, Jeff, so much for joining us again today to offer some insight into what Premier is doing. We appreciate your time. And I think that this conversation matches up well with our caller on in White Mountain. Roger is on and wants to talk about too much prepackaged food. And I think this kind of gets at the heart of what Jeff was just describing about looking at your grocery list and making healthier choices. Roger.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
50.4% of Americans suffer from weight problems, which could lead to numerous and very serious problems later in life. Most packaged and processed foods sold in stores and what is available in school cafeterias should be put under the microscope and looked at. Fast foods, outlets, microwavable packaged foods are some of the things Americans are not going to give up anytime soon. Whomever is selling convenient foods in America, they always meet the demand for American appetites. Obesity, cancers, and diabetes are serious problems across the board, and they're all related to overweight problems. That was my comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Roger, for that call. And I know that a lot of times in smaller communities, it's difficult. You know, in Bush, Alaska, it's really hard to get fresh fruit, fresh vegetables. That's a problem that's going to have to be looked at, too, is how can people access better foods in places? I know that engaging in subsistence activities is good because the diet is healthier, and also you're out moving around and getting those resources, and that's a good way to better health. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. Talk is the number outside of Anchorage. 550-8422 is the number in town to join our discussion. We're going to take a few more calls here, but before we do, I wanted to kind of piggyback on something that Roger said about the need for people doing more to look at healthier foods and learning more about that. And I wonder about things like the First Lady, Michelle Obama, started right out in the White House by planting a garden, a vegetable garden. And now she has a program in schools, the Let's Move program. I saw her in a hilarious late night television fitness challenge with a talk show host doing push-ups, and she just smoked him doing push-ups. So she's out there talking to young people about the importance of dance, of moving, of getting exercise. Do these things really have an impact? Do you think that these things really help to raise awareness about the importance of exercise, A, and also in planting a garden, helping children connect to where your food comes from that you're eating? How do these kind of things help, or do they help?
Yeah, I think they really do help. And just raising awareness, while it's not necessarily going to be the final push to get people to change their behavior, but it's important for folks to understand. And any opportunity for leaders to demonstrate that is really important. Some of the policy things that have been put in place over the years and that folks are working on right now to address Roger's concern is just one example is the State Division of Public Health has been working on a couple of things with the Department of Education and with school districts on programs to bring more and improve physical fitness in the schools. And they have some initiatives that are helping kids to get more engaged, not just through new physical education programs, but incentivizing for kids in the schools with contests and those sorts of things related to physical activity. But the another issue related to healthy foods and is a relatively new, I think in just the past 3 years or so, food policy council in Alaska. And public health officials are working with them to improve business opportunities for farmers in Alaska producing fresh food for Alaskans at the same time, making more healthy foods available. And I know through the tribal health system and others are actively involved in supporting subsistence lifestyles as well, and trying to make those choices the easy choice again. I mean, the availability of cheap, easy food does not help Americans or Alaskans' health.
Not the best path, that's for sure. Well, along those lines of helping children learn and make good decisions, Doug in Fairbanks wants to talk a little bit about incentives for teachers. Hi, Doug.
Hey. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to mention our incentive program that we have for teachers. And first of all, that we're a self-insured district, and it's through the borough. The borough is self-insured, so when we keep costs down, it reflects back with lower premiums, which is really nice. So it's a very strong incentive program. We have a health fair in the fall, and with biometric numbers, and then there's a sign up to do audit to get our risk assessment, and then just for doing the risk assessment, there's a $100 incentive. And then there's a $400 incentive if you can reach certain goals, and that's by September 15th usually. So it's a big incentive to look at the healthy side instead of for preventative medicine.
Well,
and it's something that we've been doing for about 4 or 5 years.
It's interesting that we seem to be seeing kind of this theme emerge here that money helps. That if people can see some clear incentives for achieving some of these goals, that whatever gets people involved in it, I think, makes sense. And then hopefully, as Tammy said, when people start to feel better, then they just kind of continue on their own momentum. But sometimes it takes a nudge or a push or maybe $100 to help people realize that they want to do a better job of taking care of themselves. Doug in Anchorage has a comment about unions and discounts for healthcare. Doug, are you there? Doug in Anchorage. Maybe he decided he had to do something else. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. And if you're calling in the Anchorage area, 550-8422 is the number to call. We're going to take just a short break again, and we'll come back and talk some more about incentives and what our country might look like if everyone got enough exercise and ate the right diet as Talk of Alaska on Healthcare Solutions continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
Thanks for joining us on Talk of Alaska today as we talk about healthcare solutions to the rapidly increasing costs of healthcare in our country. We had an email from someone who wanted to know if there's any specific statistics or research that shows a clear correlation between having an annual preventative visit with a primary care physician and lower overall healthcare costs. She said this is Kara. She says she's aware of studies showing a positive return on investment for a variety of wellness programs, but she's curious about the specific aspect. Since insurance plans do cover annual preventative care with no cost to the patient, is there a correlation between this prime motivation for doing that and lower costs? Deb, any idea about that?
I'm not aware of a study that provides a direct correlation.
Certainly, we know it's a good idea for people to have an annual exam and just keep a kind of a watch on your health. You take your car to the shop once a year or every so often to get the oil changed. You should take yourself into the doctor and make sure that all your systems are running well also.
I think one of the things to be careful about when we're talking about costs of healthcare and prevention is to understand that by preventing early death or disability, you're not necessarily reducing overall healthcare spending over the life of that particular person or a population. And there are too many other factors that come into play. And one of the things and it would be the same of an annual wellness visit, you'd have to track over time. Mm-hmm. If there are other things that are being picked up and would at least in the short term potentially increase costs for the payer for that particular patient and for that patient. So it gets really complicated. I think the thing that I'm most excited about, the solutions that the Healthcare Commission's been identifying, is every different strategy we look at is about making care better and making health better. Overall, that the way to decrease healthcare spending is to make the healthcare system work better. So I guess my response to that question would be, well, if it's the right thing to do because it's going to help the patient to live a healthier lifestyle, that's the reason to do it. Not the reason to do any of these things we're doing isn't just about saving money.
Mm-hmm. If everyone, let's look at an ideal world. If everyone got at least moderate exercise each week, maintained a healthy weight and diet, didn't smoke, drank little or no alcohol, what would the work of healthcare look like? Would we eliminate a lot of diseases? I know that, or at least it's my understanding, that emphysema is completely linked to smoking, that if you don't smoke, you don't get emphysema. It's a totally preventable disease. Are there others that could be totally prevented if we all did the right things by our bodies?
This is Tammy, and I think that's such a great question, and it would be such a wonderful world to think about that we would see. I think it would not only just eliminate some of the disease specifically related to obesity, but in a broader context, you know, our country and our society would function at such a different level. I mean, right now we talk about healthcare dollars that are wasted. What people don't often talk about are the indirect costs of the cost of ill health. So if you look at in a company, 25% may be your direct medical spend, 75% is related to lost productivity, presenteeism, absenteeism, depression, I mean, multiple kinds of things. So in my mind, what that would bring is really a true state of health and well-being in a larger context and move us away from really what we think of as illness care to true health and well-being promotion rather than being kind of siloed in those areas. And I do think it would make a huge difference in our economic base, not only just health care. So sometimes I'd like to see those two linked a little more closely so that people understand that health, poor health really does impact our economy.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to another caller here. Ned is in Soldotna, and he has a question about delaying costs to older age. Ned, can you explain that for us? I guess Ned's gone. Let's go to Kara in Anchorage, who wants to talk about workplace wellness. Hi, Kara.
Hi. I could really echo everything that Jeff and Tammy have said. In fact, I know both of them quite well in my work as a worksite wellness consultant, and but just wanted to bring up the point that employers can do a lot on their own in looking at their worksite and looking to see if they're promoting a healthy lifestyle or not, you know, both in cafeterias and vending machines, but also, you know, are employees allowed to work while they move while they work, and different opportunities like that, for instance, you know, a walking workstation or a biking workstation, things like that.
Those are great suggestions. I know that one of my colleagues in the APRN system at one of our stations has a stand-up workstation where he doesn't sit, as most of us in newsrooms sit a lot, and work the phones, we're writing, we're reading, and he stands and finds that he's more productive and feels better. And so I haven't switched over to a standing while I work yet, but I am considering it. There's a question that came in on email here about educating young children that fruit and vegetables are good for their bodies, and also an interesting thought about cooking classes in middle or high school. She says, I've heard that in some areas it's been a generation or two since people cook for themselves. And I'm thinking back to many years ago when I was in high school, and we had home economics, home ec, where you learned how to cook. And I wonder what is going on in schools now and if that's still part of the practice. Did the commission look at all at what's happening in schools, Deb, in just a final couple seconds here that we have?
We were focused on what's happening in schools, programs for incentivizing physical education more than anything else so far.
Well, thank you so much to my guests, Tammy Green, Deb Erickson, and Jeffrey Davis. Thanks to Kristen Speck and also Annie Fite on the phones. This is Lori Townsend. Thanks, and tune in next week for Talk of Alaska. Steve Heimel will be back.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com, and by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922, on the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.